thanks very much for that, and sorry about the confusion. The only thing I'm sure about is that I'm doing the sermon. You know, when somebody comes on television, sometimes people say, she was born to be a star. He was born to play football. She was born to be a politician. He was born to be a soldier. She was born to help the underprivileged. He was born to entertain. You know, when we hear that, the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what was I born to be? What's my purpose? And it was Mark Twain who once said, there are two great days in a person's life, the day we're born and the day we discover why. And the first day explains our presence on earth, and the second day explains our purpose. So, what were we born to do? What was I born to do? What were you born to do? It's a hard question, and it's a question that we ask ourselves from time to time in the different seasons of our lives. What am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my career? What am I going to do with my retirement? What am I going to do with my skills, my money? Lord, what do you want me to do? Can we have the next? And it's Proverbs chapter 3 tells us, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all that you do, and he'll show you which path to take. God, it's nice to hear that, isn't it? You know, it's reassuring. God will show us the way. How does he do that? You know, there are all sorts of different ways about the way in which God can guide us. Sometimes it's because we just happen to be in the right place at the right time. Like, say, with Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch. Just happened to be passing by. It can be that he can open closed doors, like he did in the early church when Saul the persecutor came into the church and said, I've seen the risen Christ and I'm going to join you and I'm going to help you and I'm going to lead you. It was a closed door. They were suspicious of him. And then they accepted him. The door was opened. He can remove obstacles, like, for example, he did when he sent the plagues to persuade Pharaoh to let the Hebrew slaves free. He can use our mistakes and our failures, like he did so often with Peter. He can do it by planting a silly idea in our mind. I remember in the last years of my career, and some of you will know that I was a headmaster in Bexley, and I was in one of the best schools in Bexley, and I'd been there, and I thought I was going to live out my career there quite happily, until one Friday when the director of education came in and said, I know you're in one of the best schools in the borough, I want you to move to the worst school in the borough and see what you can do there. Silly idea. But sometimes we respond to silly ideas, and I did, and we'll describe it as interesting. He can bring good ideas out of bad. For the three Sundays that I'm with you across the month, we're going to be taking a look at, as you probably guessed, the life of Joseph. And because we know how the story ends, We know that despite all the trials and all the tragedies and all the tribulations that Joseph had in his life, it came good in the end. And when his brothers, who had done so much damage to him, finally were reunited with him, we have that classic phrase, "You meant it all for evil, but God meant it for good." And if you read any Christian biography, you can see how God works, often apparently in very small ways, but with huge results. And this is what in Proverbs 16 means when it says, "In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps." So I'll go back to the opening question. Do we know why we were born? Some people find their mission in life early, and others much later. And sometimes we need circumstances to direct us. I don't know, Jean and I just finished watching that really good television program, I Fought the Law. Anybody see it? And it's the story of a lady called Anne Ming, whose daughter was killed, who was let down by the police so badly that when they searched the property where the daughter had lived in, they completely missed anything. And it was after 3 weeks that Anne Ming found her daughter's body behind the bath panel. The man who was charged with the murder was acquitted after 2 hung juries had failed to find a verdict. He then admitted that he'd done it, but because of the law of double jeopardy, he couldn't be tried again. Anne Ming then spent 15 years campaigning to have the law of double jeopardy changed, and she was finally successful. It was the way, and the point of this is the way in which, after some personal experience, some personal disaster, something happening, people become single-minded in the task that they've been given to do. Joseph, the son of Jacob, the son of Isaac, the son of Abraham, was born, as we know in retrospect, to save his family. But Genesis 37 actually tells us 3 things about Joseph right at the very start of the story. He's 17, he's working on the family farm, and he's no idea about what life has in store. If we'd said to the teenage Joseph, "Do you know why you were born?" he'd probably have shrugged his shoulders and said, "Well, I suppose I'm going to be a shepherd, just like Jacob and Grandad Isaac and great-granddad Abraham." But he's no idea, absolutely no idea what lies ahead, any more than any one of us when we were 17, if your memories will go back that far. We didn't know what the future held. We didn't know what our life was going to hold, and neither did Joseph. Now, the point about it is, we have the wisdom of hindsight. We know how the story works out. But remember, Joseph was going to go through years and years and years of a spiral of triumph and tragedy, and he'd no idea what lay ahead. So how can we discover God's will? And the answer is, we can't. We don't discover God's will. God's will finds us where we are. And that's true for Joseph, and it's true for us. God's will is often revealed to us just a little bit at a time. Now, what do we know about Joseph? He grew up in a dysfunctional family. Almost certainly they would have been on the social services register, had the social services register existed. 1 father, 4 mothers, 12 brothers, 1 sister. And we are told quite clearly that Joseph was the favourite son. He was the first son by the woman that Jacob really loved, Rachel. And as we read the story, we see that Joseph overcame his background. He overcame the dysfunctionality of the family. He overcame the abuse that he'd experienced. And one of the lessons we learn from that is it doesn't matter what our history is. It doesn't matter what our background is. It doesn't matter where we've come from. What matters is where God is leading us to. It doesn't matter the people that we were. It's what matters is who is it that God is going to make us. So Joseph, he was born into this family that was filled with jealousy, it was filled with distrust, it was filled with abuse. It wasn't a happy family. But God used Joseph and used him mightily. And actually, of course, if we're honest, none of us come from perfect families. There's probably no such thing as a perfect family. Our families are less important than who we are. There was a song that Michael Jackson sang. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. And no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, look at yourself and then make a change. We serve God by looking at ourselves and asking, who does God want me to become? What does God want me to do? In Romans 3, Paul's talking about the difference between the Jews and the Gentiles, and he's really asking, which is better? Is it better to be a Jew? Is it better to be a Gentile? What are the advantages and what are the disadvantages? And he comes to the conclusion, it doesn't matter. There's no difference because, he says, we are all made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ. And this is true for everyone who believes, no matter who we are. For everyone has sinned and fallen short of God's glorious standard. Everyone who believes, it's true for everyone. There's no difference, says Paul in the New English Bible. No difference between rich and poor. No difference between religious and pagan. No difference between Jew and Gentile, between young and old. No difference between the criminal and the choir boy, because all of us, whoever we are, can be touched by God's mercy, by God's love, and by God's grace in Jesus. And we're all broken people. We're all in the same boat, and unless God does something, we all sink together. The difference is, some of us know that, and some of us don't. So, if we come from a broken home, then Joseph's story is for us. If we don't get along with our brothers and sisters, Joseph's story is for us. If we're abused, Joseph's story is for us. If friends lie to us and let us down, Joseph's story for us. If our family don't understand us, then that story is for us. I would like to claim I have read the novel Anna Karenina. I would like to claim that I've read a lot of Tolstoy. If I'm honest, I've never read anything of Tolstoy, but I did discover on a website that Anna Karenina begins with this sentence. Can anybody tell it me? No, you've not read Tolstoy either. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And this is certainly true for Joseph and his brothers. They are an unhappy family, and they have their own way of showing it. Here we are at the beginning of chapter 37. Joseph is tending his flocks with the brothers in Canaan. By the end of the chapter, we didn't read that far because it's ever such a long chapter. By the end of the chapter, he's moved from being a shepherd in Canaan to being a slave in Egypt, and his life seems to have just gone in an even more downward spiral, going in the wrong direction. But although he was a shepherd, although he was working in the fields with his brothers, somehow he thought himself better than them. He was the favorite. He was the one with the technicolor dream coat, embroidered long sleeves, the sort of robe that the son of a royal might wear. And by wearing this robe, what Joseph was actually saying to his brothers and to his father, I'm destined for greater things than you are. You know, if we want a brief potted two-word description of Joseph at 17, that my two words would be spoiled brat. And then he had these dreams. In the first dream, he and his brothers were gathering the bundles of wheat in a field, and his bundle stood up and the other bundles bowed down before it. And, well, we can figure that out, and we can also figure out that his brothers weren't thrilled to be told that one day they would have to bow to him. And then the second dream. Then he dreamed another dream, and I think the next little phrase is telling, and told it to his brothers. I mean, did he have a death wish? One day, then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, I dreamed another dream, and the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. And so the downward spiral began. His brothers hated him. Four times in the chapter, we are told that they hated him. They disliked him. They conspired against him. Verse 18, the brothers conspired against him. Verse 19, when they saw him coming, they derisively said, here comes the dreamer. Verse 20, they planned to kill him and throw him into a pit. Now, verse 24, they throw him alive into an empty pit, and then, just showing their absolute, utter contempt, verse 25, while he was in the pit screaming for help and protesting that life wasn't being very fair to him, they had their barbecue. And you can just imagine, can't you, the laughter and the mockery that the brothers were giving while Joseph was there screaming for help. And then along come some desert traders, and so the plan was changed. They weren't going to kill Joseph after all. They were going to sell him, and they sold him for 20 pieces of silver, the price of a slave. Don't know if that rings any bells with you, of somebody who was sold for 30 pieces of silver. As Jesus was betrayed by Judas. And then, having sold Joseph off to these traders to cover their crime, the brothers took the coat and they dipped it in animal's blood, and they told Jacob that Joseph was dead. Joseph was taken off to Egypt and he was sold to Potiphar. And we'll take a look at his life with Potiphar next time. But we just need to note one or two things. Here's a sordid, messed up story of family feuds and abuse. Two things to notice in chapter 37. It's a very long chapter. It's a story of Joseph, and not once is God mentioned. And secondly, using our retrospective vision, while we are horrified to see the way Joseph's been treated, even if a little bit of us says, serves him jolly well right, although we might be horrified, we actually have that retrospective view that tells us it's all going to come good. You know, he's going to be all right. The boy's going to make it. But Joseph didn't know that. But looking back, You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. Looking back over the years when he holds high office in Egypt, he might have known, actually, although I didn't see it, God was there. And it might be that there's something happening in your life now. It might be there's something happening in your family. It might be there's something happening in the church. It might be there's something happening in the community. And it's going to be days or weeks or months or years when you're able to say, I didn't see it at the time, and it was awful, but God meant it for good, and he used it, and he helped me. And so we learn from the story of Joseph that when we trust in God, he will lead us. As we are faithful, we'll find and live his plan. And so that brings us back to Mark Twain. There are two great days in a person's life, the day we are born and the day we discover why. And it took a long time, not in chapter 37, I think we get to chapter 40 something, but eventually Joseph discovered the purpose that God had for him. But when he was in the pit, when he was with Potiphar, when he was doing all the different things that we're going to read about in the coming chapters, the fact that he didn't know that God was guiding and leading and helping doesn't mean that God wasn't guiding and loving and leading and helping. But he's not there yet. So, do I know why I was born? Do you know why you were born? Well, perhaps a good answer might be, I was born to serve the Lord, and everything else is a detail. Let's pray together.